Production. Recorded live.
Okay, well, welcome to Liberty Alliance. I did mute everybody in the room, so once we get through the introduction here, we'll unmute everybody. Just a couple of notes I'd like to start off with so that everybody knows. We do meet every Monday here at 7:45 p.m., and that's Eastern Standard Time. We do have people visiting us from out of state, so we put up Eastern Standard. We need to grow, and I think as people start to realize the power of what we're talking about and what we're teaching here, they'll realize that we do have to grow. And in order for us to grow, the best thing for us to do is if everyone can bring a guest every week, a new guest. And when those guests become regulars and they bring guests, we can double our size quite often. But that's the way I think we're going to have to grow, and we do have to grow, not just here in New York, but really throughout the country. So if everybody can bring one next time, that would be really good. You know, we are advancing. We're teaching some things that are very important, and the good thing about this particular program is that we record these programs and we post them. And so they are available, the programs before. This is our third episode, so the two episodes before, one was the introduction to this particular room and what it is that we're doing, and the second one focused in on the 14th Amendment, which is extremely important. It really touches the idea of who you really are, whether you're one of the people or are you one of the subjects of this country. And believe it or not, for those who weren't here for that, you're either one or the other, and if you don't know, then you're a subject, and therefore you have to answer to mommy and daddy, which is the federal government particularly, but also the state. But anyway, people can go back. Matter of fact, if you go up to our website, newyorkcommittymen.org, okay, and on the left side, you'll see a talk show box. And in that little box, you'll see a play button, and you'll see a drop-down box also. So you could play, you know, the last episode or the episode before. You can choose whatever episode you want to listen to. And we do label them according to subjects, so that people can go back and find the information they want. This, of course, after our program, will be added to that list, and there are some notes on what the program is about. Thomas Jefferson said, "If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. There is power in knowledge." And I don't think people really realize, because we've been so dumbed down and we are not educated anymore. Our education system is horrible. I don't think people realize how powerful words are, how powerful knowledge is. So knowledge is extremely powerful. Just a quick thing. I had a conversation with someone who had a young person from, I think, here from New York, over in Orange County. And maybe they're online with us tonight. And if they are later on, maybe they can tell a little more about this. But they went to school for political science, and in the process of going to school, they learned nothing about the Constitution, and so therefore they learned nothing about the law either, or how to be free and what the political system is all about. I've talked with lawyers. My brother went to law school, and he said also they never taught him anything about the Constitution. So he didn't learn anything about law. They just teach him statutes, and statutes are rules and good ideas, but it's not law. And the statutes are law to the government, but not to the people. And there's a difference, and we have to understand that, and that is one of the key points of understanding on who you really are and be able to start to exercise your knowledge to the point of being able to truly be free. NewYorkCommittyman.org, we've created an educational site. We have tremendous amount of information. As a matter of fact, I just revamped that site over the weekend, so I think it might be a little easier to get through, a lot less clutter on the left side. We only have about eight different links now, and then we do subcategorizing of the different subject matters. So people should find it a lot easier to get around and be able to find the information. If you're looking into common law or the court system, you know, you click on solutions. You'll figure that out shortly when you search around. And if you want to know about the committee man, you just click on the committee man process, and then you'll get all the subcategories in that area. But we do teach, we're going to be putting up a course soon, very, very soon, on court access, how to access the courts. And that will give you information on both the state and the federal. And it doesn't matter what state you're in, it works everywhere. We already have a free course up there, which is about 30-plus hours of common law, and everybody should be working on that because that's the key thing. But once you have the understanding and knowledge of common law, you now have to figure out how to get into the courts, and that's what we're putting together is a course on court access. We have a constitutional course, which is about 10 hours. We have American history lectures, great, great lectures. You've got to go listen to these things. We also offer Bible studies. We have hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands, of hours of Bible studies. We also have some information on the Continental Congress and an educational setup on how the path of the Continental Congress, how Robert Schultz set forth a motion that led us over the course of about 8 years or 7 years, well, about eight or nine years, how he set a course and eventually ended up at Continental Congress 2009. Some people don't know that that actually took place, but that's a huge, huge thing, and we as committeemen in New York, we're going to need to lift that up once we gain power. We also have some stuff on the county sheriff, America's Last Hope, and we have numerous subjects on today's issues. Most of that stuff is in audio and video, so it's a little easy. Some stuff is in reading, and particularly in court access. Common law is mostly all audio, a little bit of video. And our constitutional course is video, 10 hours, and American history lectures are quite a few hours of it's video. Okay, so anyway, you can also join our meetup group. When you go out to newyorkcommittymen.org, on the top right side, you'll see a join button. And you might want to join if you're from out of state. Just put your state in. If you're from in-state, we want to get your county particularly. All right, anyway, let's get forward. You know, we don't need to restore the Constitution. We need to restore the people. And that's a pretty big statement. We need to really understand. There's nothing wrong with the Constitution. It's the people's understanding of the Constitution. They don't understand what it is and how to really exercise their rights. We did touch on that in past episodes, but we may focus in on that in the near future. Tonight, what we're going to focus in on is consent. Silence is consent. Non-action is consent. So if you're not active in trying to bring things back, then you're consenting to the status quo. If you're not saying something and being boisterous about it, then you are consenting to the status quo. And we get what we deserve if we're not going to get up and do something. Thomas Jefferson said about the people, he said, men by their constitutions are naturally divided into two parties. First party, those who fear and distrust the people. And we got way too many people in government that belong to that part of the party. The second, those who identify themselves with the people, they have confidence in them, cherish and consider them as the most honest and safe depository of the public interest. You know, I'd like to make one other statement also. We have absolutely no problems with our government. Let me repeat that. There are no problems with our government, the structure, the way things work, the legislators' system, the judicial system. You know, there's no problems with any of them. The problem is the people that are in power that is exercising the power of our political structure. That's the problem, and that's what we have to correct. Before we look a little bit at the consentor and who the consentor is, which of course is the people. We the people are the consentors, but we do elect the committeeman to represent us, and we do that every 2 years. But let's look a little bit at people power, and I'm going to read some case law. This is case law. This is not just New York law. We do have a couple of case law in here that's from New York, but most of this is U.S. case law, okay? So listen to this, and this should empower people. There's power in words, and those who are listening to all these episodes, when you put them all together, you'll see how you can exercise that power and how powerful it is. How judges will fear to make the wrong decision on your case. How politicians will fear not being obedient unto you and others who are part of your committee. So again, the solution is education, and we have to educate ourselves. We have to become knowledgeable. Knowledge is power. But here's some of the conclusions we have in case law. This is in every state of the union. People are supreme, not the state. That's case law. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. And I'm just going to kind of read this through so I can get through it quickly. I've got about 15 of them, but they're so strong and so powerful, and we need to realize them. And again, you know, we have all this stuff up on our site, and we will have it in our court procedure course that we'll be getting together shortly, and you'll have all these things in writing. But just listen, because this is power, okay? At the Revolution, the sovereignty devoted on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country. But they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. You're the king of your little world. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. So when our founding fathers put this whole process together, we have the power of the king, we the people. We're going to see that when we get to the look a little bit at the preamble of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. But anyway, here's another one. It is the public policy of this state that public agencies exist to aid in the conduct of the people's business. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devoted on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country, which I had read that part. They are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and limitation of power. So people, you know, legislators cannot make law to control people. Legislators make law to govern bureaucrats, municipalities, government agencies. Here's another one. To presume that a sovereign forever waives the rights to exercise one of its powers unless it expressly reserves the rights to exercise that power in a commercial agreement turns the concept of sovereignty on its head. So you can have a driver's license and still be free, for those who understand what I'm talking about here. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Sovereignty means the doctrine of sovereign immunity is one of the common law. Immunities and defenses are available to the sovereign, not to judges, not to officers of the court, but the sovereign. They're the ones that have sovereign immunity. I'm going to skip some of these and just get through them. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which could abrogate them. So there can be no legislation that can abrogate your law, your rights. There could be no rulemaking. So people have to understand that, and that's power. When people understand that, now you can go to court and challenge everything they have to say. You just have to know the right way. You've got to keep yourself within your jurisdiction. And once you understand the process, you can control the courts, and we can also control the political process. The state cannot diminish the rights of the people. All right, I'll just end that for now. I got quite a few. There is a lot, and you'll find a lot of this stuff up on our website. But let's get to the consent. In the preamble, in the U.S. and also in our New York Constitution, and it's probably the case in probably all or at least most of the constitutions. I know California has this in it. I know New York has it in it, and I heard that quite a few states have it in it, but definitely have it in the U.S. Constitution where it says, we the people do ordain and establish the Constitution. So in our U.S. Constitution, it uses the word ordain. That establishes us as a king only kings ordain. So if the people ordain the power to the government can make no law to control the king. You see, in common law, the only thing that you are held responsible to or of is when you violate another individual. If you injure another person or you injure their property, now you're responsible to that individual, and that's breaking the law. But they can't make rules and laws up out of their hat. There has to be an injured party. So that's an item to look for whenever you go to court. You know, if there's no injured party, you've broken no law, no matter what it is. Here's a New York code. This is very important for us in New York, of course, and it's law subsection 2 in the New York Code section 2. Supreme sovereignty in the people. No authority can, on any pretense whatsoever, be exercised over the citizens of this state, but such as is or shall be derived from and granted by the people of this state. Legislators cannot make law. Only people can make law. And when we get into the court of record to start discussing those things, you'll see how the people get to make law. Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition, says Republican government, one in which the powers of sovereignty are invested in the people and are exercised by the people, either directly or through representatives chosen by the people, to whom those powers are specially delegated. Blackstone's commentary says the consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity, I don't know how to pronounce that word, of the king. His majesty in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. Black's Law Dictionary, 4th edition, the power to do everything in the state without accountability. So how do you consent in the courts and in our political process? How is it that we have the power to consent whether we want them to do something or not do something? Well, there's two processes. One is in the judicial system, and it's called a court of record. And the other one is in the political system, and it's called the committee man. Now, the court of record, we're going to talk about it another time on how it is that we give our consent and how we control the courts and control the judges and control the outcome, because we're interested in justice. We're not interested in all these political games that they play in the courtrooms. And we have the power to make changes, but we have to have endurance because it's going to be an uphill battle. But once the battle is fought once, In different areas, as you move throughout the state, that's all that needs to be done, and all the judges will fall into line and start to be obedient as others come in behind you or you come back in with other cases into the court system. So many of us are out there forging the path for this process here in New York and in many other states. But tonight, the committee man is who we're looking at. The committee man is the consentor of the people. This is how the people consent to the government. Each election district, and in New York State, for instance, we have 16,400 election districts. And each election district elects one individual, one committeeman. So there's 16,400 committeemen in each party. And here in New York, we are bringing both the Republican and the Democratic parties together in order to work to reinstate the Constitution. But this is the consenter. This is the individual that makes the decision, yay or nay. This is the person that decides on whether this person's going to be chosen to fill a seat for a primary, and people make the final decision, of course, in the primary. But these are the people that make those decisions. These are the people that count the votes. These are the people that have to have integrity and have to be dealing righteously with all the issues in order for our whole system to become righteous and to have integrity within it. If the committeemen have integrity and the committeemen are acting righteously, rest assured your elected individuals and your appointed individuals will be doing the same. And whatever criminal activities they might be doing, they'd be going underground. They wouldn't be done in the open as they are today. They don't make no bones about it. They don't even try to hide it. They do all their legal activities right up front. But anyway, here in New York, we have what's called the member of the county committee, which is a town committeeman. And George Washington spoke about this. And it is the town committeeman that is not elected, but that's what fills the seats throughout the entire state of New York. We've been working on this project for quite some time, and we have about 150 elected committeemen throughout the state of New York in both parties, all working in one accord with one focus, directing their minds and their sights on the Constitution. And once we get into power, that's what we're going to push for. We're going to make sure that these people pay attention and obey the Constitution. So when you become a committeeman, you become the consentor. You consent to what you want. And once these people are in power, just because they've been elected doesn't mean you can't take them out of power. There are two ways to remove anybody that is in power, at least on a state. Well, you can remove on a state level. You do have a problem on a federal level because you've got 49 other states to deal with. So you'd have to get more than half the states to agree with you in order to take a president out and replace him by doing a recall. But here in the state of New York, you have the power of recall. You can recall the governor. You can recall a senator. Unfortunately, it should be up to the legislators to be able to, the state legislators, whether they should recall a senator or not. But right now, it stands in the hands of the people, so they have the power. You can recall a congressman, any legislator on any level, county or state, anybody in any town. You can recall anyone that's elected, a judge, anyone. That's the power of the committeeman. So if you see someone that is out of line and not obeying the Constitution, not supporting the Constitution, selling their vote, taking money for their vote, and so on, well, you can just recall them. And all it takes is really to get the support of the committee. Now, it is true, it is a problem trying to get everyone to agree in those committees that are captured by the status quo, those who are captured by the elite ultimately. They can just hold the status quo. But here in New York, we have a situation that when we gain power, we're not going to have the status quo to worry about. It's going to be freedom-minded people who are going to control this system. And again, the details of those plans are up on our website. And in the future, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the details of those plans and how we expect to do that. But anyway, we got the power of recall. Now, the second way you can remove someone from office is if, let's say, here in New York, once we gain power, well, let me just make the point of how we're gaining power. We're in court. We have two court cases going, one that was started in 2011 and one that was started in 2012. Both of them are coming to the head right now at the same time. So very shortly, I'd like to say, sooner than later, but, we're looking at 2011 case coming to an end in January. We know that because we have our dates for the appeals, the appellate court. The other one could be this month or next month, but it's coming soon also. And so we have two of them going through the process, and we only need to win one. One went through the court system through the conventional way, but we did exercise the jurisdiction of common law. We were very strong on the points of common law, and we're going to go before the appellate court with common law. And we're going to hold their feet to the road here, to the rubber, to the road, or the grinder. These people on the appellate court will rule your jurisdiction. Because we're coming up in common law, they will rule in that common law jurisdiction. They have no choice because they have to answer the people above them, and they could face other problems by going against the jurisdiction that they'd be ruling in. But in any event, we have these two court cases, and once we achieve one of them, then it'll be ordering the state of New York to recognize the Board of Elections throughout the state of New York to recognize the designating petition titled committeeman, because right now only members of the county committee, which are town committeemen, are in seats. Once they recognize that, then we take power, and we literally take power of every county, of every executive committee throughout the entire state of New York. And that's a pretty powerful statement. It's a pretty powerful thing when we achieve that. And we're doing this through the court system. The second case is a court of record, and this is where the real power is. If we lose on the conventional end, we will win in the common law court of record end. And we will enforce the law through a court system that we have control over and not the judge and not other individuals. It's ruled over by the people and for the people. So those are the two ways we're looking to take power. But again, once we take power, then it's a matter of exercising what needs to be done. Now, another way to take an individual out of office, okay, is through a grand jury. And once we unite as committee men throughout the state of New York, we're then going to start teaching people and organizing people who might be interested in sitting on the grand jury. We're also going to create a jury pool across the entire state also. And I should suspect and suggest that every committee member, you know, join the jury. They should jump into the jury pool. So whenever there's something that comes up, then they can be the jury in their town or the county or whatever to make the decision on what needs to be done in the courts when there are jury trials. And the judges have no control over a common law jury. That's an important point. They also have no control. No politician and no judge and no man has any power over a grand jury that's common law. And that's what we want to set up. And a common law jury can recall at will, on the spot, any elected individual within the state. So that's pretty powerful. Of course, that individual has to be breaking the law, like maybe not obeying the Constitution. And, of course, all the statutes that are written in order to make him to be obedient. So that's the power of the consentor. Not only do they get the chance to choose and cast the vote with other like-minded individuals, hopefully, at least in New York, once we take power, to put the best people in power. But we also have the authority and the right to watch these people. And when they get out of line, get together in a meeting, make a decision, get the message to this person, you know, behave, we're going to recall you, and recall them. We could have anyone out of office within 90 days and someone brand new being elected within that 90 days. So this is the process and this is the power. That's power. But we also have the power of counting the votes, okay? And that's a huge thing also. They can have their machines, but it better add up to the votes that we count, because what's going to count is the ones that we hand count. Not Leibolt or any of these other corporations. And by the way, it is our friendly Democratic and Republican Party that has made the decision on who counts the votes. They're the ones that have made the decisions that it's going to be counted by machines, by corporations like Leibolt and others. Okay, with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the mic and for a conversation if anybody has any questions or any comments, and we can get discussing things. So let me unmute everyone. Okay, everybody should be unmuted now. Any questions or comments? Mic is open. And we don't have to necessarily stick on this particular subject. We can talk about anything concerning the committee man or the court of record, you know, the judicial process or the political process.
Okay, I'd like to make a comment if I could have the floor for a moment.
Sure, go right ahead.
Hey, you know, from listening to you and from the involvement that I've had in this effort with other people here in my state.
Can you give us your first name and state?
Paul in Pennsylvania.
Okay, Paul.
Is what you're trying to do and what we're trying to do here is teach people how to increase the magnitude of their personal influence. In other words, when you go out and you stand on the side of the road with a sign saying, "I hate this politician," or whatever it might be, you are attempting to increase the magnitude of your individual influence in this government through using your First Amendment right to expression. Basically, what you're doing is telling people to take the next step, to go the next level, and to increase their political influence in our government by either using the court or by becoming elected to committee person. And I'm just saying that this is the basic phenomenon that we're trying to get people to understand. Everybody seems to be aware that they have one vote. And they also seem to be aware that they can stand on the road with a sign and increase their influence above that one vote by executing those First Amendment rights. But there's also more things that we can do to increase our own individual influence. And that's what you're trying to get people to understand, that the next step above standing on the road with a sign or writing a letter or getting a petition, the next level of activity is to use the court or to become a committee man. That's the next level above First Amendment types of activities. And if we could just get all of the people that are sympathetic to the Tea Party movement, that are sympathetic to Ron Paul, that are sympathetic to these other patriot movements, to understand that what they need to do is find ways to increase their own personal influence exactly the way who has already done that. Who? The people in the GOP. What do you think? Why do you think the GOP are successful at running the country? Because they, have as individuals, have taken the next step to increase the individual magnitude, the individual influence that each one of those has. Each one of those people has. They've increased their personal influence in the government by becoming what? Becoming committee people. That's who the GOP is. The GOP is the committee people. That's who they are, and that's who's running the country. The people that are running the country are the GOP. The people who are the GOP are the committee people. There's approximately 500,000 or so committee people nationwide. It's those 500,000 people who have increased the magnitude of their influence in our government and are directing the philosophies and the principles of this country. They are steering the political course of this country. Now, if we could get all of the Tea Party people and Ron Paul people to systematically, through a methodical process, to displace each one of those people by running for committee person, each time you run for committee and you win committee, each person that does that displaces one of them, knocks one of them out, and puts one of us in. If we got all the Tea Party people to do that, we would be running this country. 2-3 years from now, we'd be running the country. We'd straighten this whole mess out.
Well, you're absolutely right. I agree with that, and obviously you're agreeing with me. And that is the only way we're going to take this country back. If we have to do it, you know, one seat at a time, then that's how we have to do it. In New York, we have a little bit of a unique situation. Once we pass our court case, we literally take it over. The key thing here is this, is we have been touring the state, a group of us has been touring the state for a couple of years now, teaching this process. And as we discovered new things and what's really going on, you know, we've been teaching this to other people. And so we've got people who have become elected. We've got, like I said, about 150 people statewide that are actually elected committeemen. Everyone else is an appointed committeeman. So you have to understand the difference what's going on here in New York State than Pennsylvania. But you do have a problem in Pennsylvania, which I'd like to address in a minute. But first, here in New York, we then have the opportunity to appoint people throughout the entire state. And when we went through the state visiting people, we visited many counties, most of the counties. I can't say all the counties. There's some counties that we haven't visited. But most of the counties we visited in New York, and we went after visiting the people in all the liberty groups, the Tea Parties, and even some Ron Paul groups. And those are the people that have got involved and in the battle. Now, there are lots of them that have not run for committeemen, but will accept the appointment of committeemen once we gain power. And then they will run the next time, the next election cycle, which will be 2013, and then they'll become elected. But we have a very unique situation here. We have people that are going to be taking the seats and total control of all of the executive committees. Here in New York, an executive committee controls the county. There are four people in every county that control everything that goes on. And each one of those, well, one of those four people is called the county chairman. And that county chairman, we have 62 counties, so we have 62 county chairmen. They're the state committee, and they control what's going on up on the state level. They elect a state chairman. Actually, in this state, it's the same guy every year, year in and out, on the county level and the state level. And it's a fix. The fix is in. They have a game that they play by oscillating the counties. Half get elected on the odd years and half on the even years. But anyway, when they get into power, ultimately it's all controlled by just a handful of people. Literally, we have a dictator in this state, and he is the New York State Republican chairman and Democratic Republican chairman. Those individuals dictate down to their party who's going to get onto the ticket, what's going on, and so on. Once in a while, you get a town that rebels because you got enough people that came in, you know, just through sheer numbers to take over. And we do need a lot more of that. Unfortunately, people don't seem to have the stamina to get out there and do it. They just don't have the fortitude. And they're not doing it. They're complacent. But they are, a lot of them are willing to come in as soon as we can show them we got power. I wish they'd come in now to work with us to get the power and show our numbers, but that's unfortunate. But nevertheless, we are in a unique situation, and we are ready to do New York. I think a lot of states have a New York problem. And somewhere in your state, there is a problem in the law. There may be something, there's something wrong, because if these people are actually elected, okay, actually elected, there's a lot of things that they're doing, it sounds, that is criminal, and they shouldn't be able to get away with it. Here in New York, they're not going to, once the elected committeemen take over, the status quo, the leaders of the status quo will fall away. Many of the people that are really on the bottom end of this thing, hopefully we'll be able to train them and teach them, and they'll come into the system, and we'll all do the right thing. And then we have to lead by example. You know, doing the right thing is the key thing here. But anyway, that's the process and the problem here in New York. There's something wrong in the other states, because, you know, this private association called the Republican and the Democratic parties, they control everything.
Absolutely. They're steering the political course of this country. And most people don't realize or understand any of that behind-the-scenes governing that's going on. People are conditioned to believe that it's all about the election. But really, the election is only about maybe 40% of the decision. And it's the last 40% of the decision. The first 60% of the decision of who gets elected is all done behind closed doors. I mean, everybody's heard that term. Oh, all of that gets decided behind closed doors. You've all heard that term.
Right, two or three men in the back room, yep.
Okay, well, where is that closed door and who's behind it then becomes the question. I mean, as an inquisitive person, that was the first thing I did, was ask, well, where's the door and who's behind it? And then the next question is, how do I get behind there? And that's what led me to figure out it's the committee people that are behind those closed doors, and it's at the convention that the principles and the philosophies of the parties are decided and then implemented through the nomination process by the parties, by the committee people. They steer the first 60% of the process behind closed doors. Then the electors decide the last 40% of the process in the primary and in the general election.
Hi, John. John, this is Giselle.
How you doing, Giselle?
Hi. Can I have a question, please?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Do I understand this right, that when you sue, you're applying, you know, the format that is already in place with regards to paperwork that the court uses, but all you're doing is changing the definitions? In other words, as you know, went through the suing system, tried to sue someone, and the paperwork and so forth I got from the court system itself, is that the paperwork you're using? And if so, do you just change the wording to the common law definitions, is my question.
Well, we use their basic forms. We use their rules. I mean, why not? We just adopt them. That's what they're used to, so that's what we use. The lawyers know that, so we just use that. They're fine.
All
their
that,
rules and their
all the
their stuff.
Paperwork when you go to file is the one that's already being used. It's nothing that you reached into history and pulled out and said no.
Well, we did. We do use certain words. There are three keywords or four keywords that we do use in our complaint. But we don't call a complaint. We call it an action at law that immediately puts it into the jurisdiction of common law. That's a key point. Now, the bottom feeders, which is the trial courts, I call the trial courts bottom feeders because they're all lawyers. The judges are lawyers. They went to law school, and they learned nothing about law. They only learned about statutes and how to support the New World Order. And so everything they do is according to statutes, and they don't even understand what we're doing. So our battle in the trial court really isn't for the trial court. It's ultimately for the upper court, unless you do it a court of record, and then it becomes a battle against the trial court.
What's the court of record? You keep throwing that definition around, and I'm not quite
right.
understanding
well,
what it is.
We do have an introduction to the court of record. It's 3.5 hours long on the New York Committeeman.org.
Okay.
And go to solutions. We did revamp the website, but you'll see it quickly as you click through the links. There's about 6 or 8 links on the left side. If you click on solutions, you'll open up and you can look at common law. Click on common law and take the introductory 3.5 hour audio on what, you know, common law.
Okay.
But ultimately, a court of record, you got to understand something. The court system, there are many different courts, and that's true in our court system today, and it's been true for thousands of years. You know, there's the court of equity, which is really usually contract and commercial, okay? There's the admiralty court, which a lot of your criminal courts operate as an admiralty court and not as a common law court. And there's numerous other courts. When you go into a courtroom, what has been really kind of just, again, the problem is our education. We're not taught this in our education, so people don't know it. They don't even know it exists. But there is a process where the king comes into the court, and if you're one of the people, you're the king, one of the kings, and so you come into the court, and you open up your court. It's your court. It doesn't belong to the government. It doesn't belong to that judge up there. The judge becomes the magistrate. We rent out the system by paying our $305 and opening up what's called a court of record by getting an index number and a RJI. Now, this may be a lot of new terms to people, and it may seem complex, and it may seem like, wow, there's a lot to learn. There really isn't. It's really simple once you get the terms. And we are putting together a course that'll lay this out and give you a step-by-step process on how to fill out the papers and how to do the process just to get the court system going.
Cool.
So I'm talking a little fast, and I'm throwing a lot of stuff out at you, but, you know, just try to follow along, and don't worry about remembering it. Just try to understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
So anyway, we go in there, we open up a court of record, and from our perspective, you see, it used to be the king in England, and the way the whole system was set up goes to about 400 or 500 AD, and where they set up a system of court, which eventually really came to its flower when the Magna Carta came around, and they laid the law down. That was 1215, but the system was set up so that the king represents the sovereign. So one person who was the king. He was the protector of the common law. That's the way it's supposed to have been. Now, of course, there was always that battle to become the king. You had the Babylonian movement, which is really civil law, trying to take over the system. And then, of course, you had natural law, which is common law, trying to maintain control. And the control of the common law really stayed pretty strong, you know, maybe up until about the 1600s and maybe even into part of the 1700s. But they started to lose its grip because the enemy came in and took over the kingship, and it got further and further away. But there's still a lot of power and strength even in that system. But in any event, the king would travel around the countryside. He'd open up a court, and if you wanted to open up a court, you know, you had a problem, you'd search out the king, you'd get to wherever he's at, and you'd go into his court, and he would make sure that you got justice. Back, you know, when this system was set up, and quite a few kings were very righteous, and they understood what their job was, to protect the people, to keep them sovereign. And he, being the king, being the ultimate sovereign, would be the protector of the people. And that was the whole focus and the attitude behind the king, as we understood it in England, that worked through the, ultimately the, it was the, I forget what that was. But in any event, that was the way the system was set up. In our country, our founding fathers, when they put it together, they said everybody's a king, you know, but you're a sovereign without people to rule over. You rule over yourself, and that's the key thing. I get to rule my life. You can't make any legislative laws to control me. You can't make any statutes. You can't require me to have a driver's license. You can't require me to have a social security number. You can't require me to get a permit to carry a gun or a permit to make a, you know, build something. You can't require me to obey all those statutes. They don't have the power. If everybody understood it and they stood up in courts and said, no, you don't have the authority, prove your jurisdiction. They can't prove their jurisdiction. And that's the battle. It's that simple. Walking into a court when they pull you in and say, excuse me, you guys don't have jurisdiction. I challenge your jurisdiction. Prove it. And they have no choice but to now prove it. Now, it's an uphill battle in the beginning as you move this kind of a situation in a town because they're not used to it, or into a county. They're not used to it. They're not used to being challenged. They're used to doing all the criminal activities in the opening, and they're not worried about the accountability or their feet being held to the fire on this. So now when you walk in and say, hey, that's not the way it's going to be here because I'm a sovereign. I'm one of the people. I wouldn't use the word sovereign. I'm one of the people. Okay, and the people, I'm the one of the ordainers. I'm above the Constitution. The Constitution wasn't written for me. It was written for the United States of America and for the state of New York in our case. And that's the attitude. So when you walk into a court and you open a court of record, you become the tribunal. It's your court. You're the king. Now, if the other person, if you're fighting a battle against an individual, another person, another one of the people, well, if they understood that they're the king, they'll challenge you and say, no, I'm the king too. You know, you're not the only king in this part of the woods or whatever. Well, now you have a jury, and then the jury decides. But most people don't understand, so you can win a lot of battles just by walking in and taking control of the court and say, I'm the tribunal. Okay, I'm opening a court of record. The other side doesn't understand it until it comes to the end of the case anyway. But if you're going up against the state, again, the people rule over the state. Why? Just think of how crazy this is. We go to court to fight the state who's not obeying the law, and we get a state-paid individual who's called a judge who's under tremendous stress by the status quo through the political process to not rule for the people, and we expect we're going to get justice? It's not going to happen. It makes a lot more sense for the people to come in and say, hey, we're in control. This is the problem. Put on a good show. Show the people that these guys are guilty. They're not obeying the law. They're trying to sidestep it. And now we're going to change it. We're going to rule. But you just put on a good show. That's what a court is all about, to put on a good show to prove to the people.
Wait a minute. If that's the case, and I'm sure it is, how come the judge can put you in contempt if you –
No, I put him in contempt.
Yeah, but...
We've already went through this process of finding the judge. We already fined a judge one silver dollar for being in contempt, okay? And we're now through the process going through the appellate court because he's gone beyond that. So we did what's called a petition for a writ of mandamus. Now, a writ of mandamus is an order from a higher court to a lower court or a lower officer somewhere.
John, can you let her ask the question? Because I just want to make sure you don't...
Go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead, Gisella.
What?
The question you were going to ask as far as...
My question was, you know, when you're in court, sometimes the lawyer will butt in and try to say something, and the judge will say whatever he'll say, and the lawyer will come back refuting the judge, and at that point the judge gets frustrated and say, you're in contempt. And if the lawyer says another word, he can go to jail. So how does that come into play once we start using common law? How can we put
because they pass a bar, they are liable, or they are being told they are have to abide by the statutes. They have to abide by the what the legislators write and all this other stuff. So when the judge says that, he's right. He can hold them in contempt. But when you have your own court, such as the court of record and the common law, the judge can't hold us in contempt because we're not having to abide by those statutes or whatever.
Yeah, he's not the judge in that in the court of record.
Okay, and so you have already directed the court to be a common law via the definition that you changed, which makes it not a law of statutes anymore. Am I getting
right? Right.
Okay, I got it.
Remember this.
I got it.
Remember this. This is an important point. Statutes are not law. Okay, we've got case law saying that very thing. Statutes are not law, okay? So when we go in and we open a court of record, you know, we write it right up, or we go in, you fill out your paperwork. And in the paperwork, you get what's called a an index number, and you file an RJI. On both of those papers, it asks you what the case is, what it's about, okay? I always go to other. There's a place, other, and there's a line there, and I write court of record. So now when I go into the court, and the judge is up there, he doesn't know what a court of record is. He's a bottom feeder. That's one of the problems we have. These people are not educated in the law. They're educated in statutes. Statutes have no application to me. Okay? Only the law, the common law, is what I would I respond to. And the law is whatever the sovereign says it is. That's another important point. This may sound crazy to people at first, but as you start working through this and understanding the process, it makes all the sense in the world. As long as you don't hurt an individual or their property, you can't be held accountable for anything. You can do as you please.
Now,
so
when you redirect the court by changing the definitions, how do they recognize? Do they recognize?
I'm wondering. I got to get going. Fortunately, I can listen.
We don't change anything. Those law, the court of record is written into the law. It's been forgotten, but it's there. We use the appellate rulings that say that it's there.
Okay.
And so we quote that, and I mean they think a court of record is just a court that keeps a record, but a court of record is actually the IRS uses it when they take you to court to get your property. And they open a court of record, and they open it as a sovereign. And actually, it's a fraud because the government cannot be a sovereign. The government is subservient to the people. So it's impossible, really, for any arm of the government to take a sovereign to court and demand stuff from him because we the people, each of us, are sovereign in our own right. But if you don't protest that, silence is consent. So guess what? That means you're recognizing them as a sovereign. And as far as a lawyer goes, even if you're not in a court of record, just basically what a lawyer is versus one of the people, and even if you're in their statutory court, a lawyer is an officer of the court. He owes his allegiance to court. The judge can get him disbarred. When you go in as a people, and they'll call it pro se or pro per or whatever, that judge doesn't have control over me. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not beholden to the court. I'm not an officer of the court. He has a lot harder time controlling me than he does that lawyer. So a lawyer is very much afraid of being held in contempt. He's also, you know, when they take them in the back room and say, don't go there, they won't go there. If you read our court papers, we slap the hell out of them. If we were a lawyer, we would have lost our license doing that.
Right, and when we go in to open a court of record, what we do is a couple of things. It's very subtle in the paperwork. We don't call it a complaint. We call it an action at law. Well, in our first line, we say your name, comma, one of the people of New York, comma, in this court of record. Now, that's everything you have to say. Sues or whatever it is that you're doing, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's the process you do in your paperwork. Everything else now is according to your case. You want to get a lot of your facts in. You want to get some case law in. You're putting on a big show, a good show for the people, because when people look at this, you want them to say, yeah, you're right. This is right. This is just. Now, the other thing we do is we accompany that. We make reference in this complaint, we make reference of the law of the case, which is incorporated herein too. Okay, so it's incorporated into the pleading, and then we attach what's called the law of the case. Now, the law of the case is 14 to 16 pages, and that lays out the whole picture of what a court of record is, with all the case law, all the meanings of words, the facts of how this process works, and everything else. Now, the lawyer gets that, and lawyers are lazy. If there's anything I found out, lawyers are lazy. They don't do anything. Let me tell you, if people who are spending money on a lawyer, if you only knew what they don't do, you'd be suing them, okay? They don't do anything. They're lazy. They don't read your papers. They make certain assumptions, and they certainly are incapable of understanding what we're talking about, because all the law they're seeing, they've never seen law before. They've only seen statutes. They've been taught in school. So they're reading law, and it's all alien to them. Now, usually a judge has a better chance to understanding it, maybe because he goes to judge school and they warn him about it a little bit. So they could possibly understand it reasonably quick. It might take two or three, you know, writs of errors that you'll have to write for the judge. You might even have to find him in contempt, okay, because he's going to try to rule. And when he tries to rule, you'll find him in contempt and find him a dollar. And they don't know what to do with any of this. They don't know how to handle this. And then some judges will eventually come together on this, or you got to go through the process to go to the appellate court, get a writ of mandamus, ordering the judge to obey the higher court, which is the court of record, and then you go back and you finish your case. And then the judge behaves. Then the judge, then you push your fine and you make sure he pays his fines. Okay, you find him a second contempt, because now you're going to come back and we're going to hit ours with probably $10 in silver. Okay? So we're going to send the sheriff to collect $11 in silver, and we're going to get the case going through, finish it off, and then we'll write the while ruling on the case, and we'll take it to the sheriff, and he will apply the law just like he will any other judgment accordingly, and you go on to the next thing in life, or another case. Mm-hmm. Okay, but it is, you know, again, you have to have faith in it, you have to have an attitude about it, and you have to understand it. And again, this is not simple. This is not difficult stuff. It's just a matter of spending time learning and listening. And like I said, we're writing papers. We're writing a book on the process. I hope to have it done soon. I'm working my best. I'd like to say I'm going to be done before the year is out. There's only a month left, so I think I might be able to be done by Christmas. And then we're going to get this book up online, and it's going to step you right through how to open up a case. How, you know, everything you need to know, you just have to spend the time and work through the book. How to do a motion, what's the paperwork, what's the requirements, what you do, how to move the case to trial. And that's a big thing. You see, in a court of record, there is no actual trial in words where people come in and they talk on the stand. That's not how a court of record goes. Well, in a court of record, it's all the paperwork. You fight your battle in the paper. You say something on paper, they say something on paper. And you go back and forth with the paperwork. And that's the trial. Now, I was working, I recently just worked out how to move that, because they want to have a regular trial without, even though there's no jury. If there's a jury, then you have a regular trial like that. But if there's no jury, it's all paper. And so you want to move this back to the trial on paper, and there is a process to do that too, I found. And I just executed that in a court case I got in Dutchess County. And so now we'll move the trial to the trial is over because it's on paper. Now we set a date for the judge to sit down, read all the papers, and then he's going to make a decision. Now, as long as he makes the right decision, well, he's my eyes, he represents, he mirrors me. So I'll then write a paper and seal it and say the judge made the right decision and we agree with that, and then we would file that case over. If he makes the wrong decision, then I'll overrule him. And then I'll give him a writ of error, and then I'll make the decision which would have been the proper way to do it, and then it'll be filed, and it'll go through the process and through the collection. So, but you have to have faith in it. You have to get a little gutsy. You have to have knowledge. Okay. With knowledge gives you power and strength, because you know you're right.
Okay.
And you can prove it on paper. And the fact that they haven't put any of us in jail yet, the fact that they haven't found us or tried to find us in contempt yet, the fact that they try to push us out of their court systems as quick as possible proves that we're onto something, and proves that what we have is so powerful that they can't argue against it. So it's good stuff, and everyone, you should be taught this stuff
sounds
in school.
Sounds exciting.
What sorts of things do you win with these court cases?
I'm sorry?
What types of cases are you fighting? What types?
Well, one of the cases we're fighting in a court of record, which is going through the process of a writ of error, is the forcing of the state of New York to recognize the elected committeeman again, because he's been expunged here. And they refuse to recognize him, and he's still in the law. He's still in election law, so they refuse to acknowledge the election law and to obey it. So that's one of the court cases we have going. We also have a regular court case of common law where the judge is the judge, because we didn't know this last year. That's coming to play in January. January 7th, we're going to be making an argument for the appellate court. I have a court case where I'm battling a client who owes me $112,000, and that's a court of record, and I just pushed that into the final phase, which is judgment on the record. We have a court case up in Greene County where a woman was being thrown off a property, and they sold the property from underneath her. She's 76 years old and ill, very ill as a matter of fact, and they're trying to throw her out and take everything that she worked her entire life for. And we stopped that. We went for an injunction. And the judge broke the law. He never called me back, didn't return my calls, wouldn't answer me. And then he just, a week later, 2 weeks, they sold the property. And then a week or 2 weeks later, he sends me a paper. Well, that was criminal. So that was okay. So what we did is we rewrote the case and we added his name on and we're suing him too. And that's in process right now. Meanwhile, the town quashed the sale and got the county legislator to rule that the sale wouldn't go through. And so they're starting to get a little feared. We don't sue the town. We don't sue the county. We don't sue the state in these cases. We sue the individuals that are conspiring and misusing their power to use the state to control us to make money for the state or the county or the town. And usually the lawyers, they're making all money off this stuff. They're raping the people there. So if you sue the person and you go after their paycheck, believe me, things happen. We went in and we did a family court case and in Greene County also, and these guys were destroying this guy, totally destroying this person, destroying his life, destroying his relationship with his children. These people are horrible, ugly individuals. Even any possibility of him and his girlfriend, you know, getting back together, and he's got a child, and he's the one who filed the papers, and he wished they never did. Well, once we opened the court of record and went in there, within 2 weeks, they don't let you go. When a family court gets their claws in you, they don't let you go. Okay, they took this guy's guns away. He went to an arraignment and got arrested. And he's the guy who filed the complaint with the family court. But in any event, within 2 weeks, everything was dropped, and they threw the case out, and they settled it, and they just wanted us to leave. Okay, because why? Because of our paperwork. When they started to see, they don't recognize the law because they don't know the law, but they know it is the law when they read it, because it's case law and they're familiar with case law, and it's statutes that are on the books that they're not aware of, and it's also federal statutes and codes that are on the books that make them control under this stuff, and they're not aware of that. And when they see it, it goes contrary to what they've been doing, and they're confused. They don't know what to do, and then they get frightened, and that's what they do. You know, we have one case, if we pursue through it, we've got three judges, a sheriff, and five or six deputies, and a prosecutor, and a lawyer who refused to leave, two lawyers who refused to leave, all in one case to be sued together in a federal court. Now, I don't know whether we're going to get that case together or not, but if the person wants to go through with it, we're going to do that case. So this is powerful stuff, and it frightens these people. And if we don't have it right and we're wrong, I got to ask the question why we're not in jail yet.
Hey, don't tempt fate, will you?
Yeah, I know. Well, we put your name first, so don't worry about it. So anyway, you want to add anything to this, Carl or Gerard or anyone else?
I do.
Yeah, this is Carl. Well, and there's soon to to be a case in the court of record. I was looking, Gerard mentioned earlier that the IRS uses a court of record for their proceedings. I just can't find the code, but it is listed in their title, and it's out there. I can't find it as far as...
It's in your notice and demand, Carl.
It is.
If you look in the front, it's in the front of the notice and command. We quote the very law of what that we're not liable, that part of the law. And in the code for that they're a court of record, I don't think that's in your notice and demand. That I can get it. Maybe next week I'll bring it. We can read it. But they are courts of record.
Sure. And a segue to that is that soon I will be opening a court of record against the IRS in my own case, who I have obviously for years been questioning the IRS and their tactics and whether they're just or not. And obviously they don't necessarily respond with anything but statutes, and then you even find out that their statutes are at fault. Some of the things that they're doing, I think it's 7206B, and it is also in my notice of demand, I don't have in front of me, but also indicates that it is not law. What they're doing is not law. It's some of the things that we're doing, finding out with the IRS is just strange, but I leave it at that. That's something that I am personally taking on myself and been doing it for years, and John's helping with doing the court of record, and that's where we're going.
Yeah, and there's other very, very extremely powerful instruments that the people have at their hands that they didn't know about. I didn't know about it. We have what's called a notice and demand. Hugely powerful. It's a commercial instrument. And after a process, a very simple process of 30 plus 14 days to, people, or 60 plus 14 days to the government going through a particular process, you then turn that into a commercial lien, and then you apply it for the judgment, and you send the sheriff out to collect your money. And you don't even go to court. I'm working through that right now. You could also take a notice and demand, and that becomes the court. When you go through that process, as long as everything's done right, and we're going to be teaching this. We teach this right now. You can go out to newyorkcommitteeman.org, click on solutions. Or when you get to solutions, click on common law. And right there, listen to the audio. We got 30, 40 or more hours of audio there on common law, plenty of reading material. And soon we'll have the process laid out very, very clearly, even in the commercial lien process. We're going to lay that out too. And so you could start on it right now by listening to the tapes and taking notes just like you're in school. I've listened to these tapes 3 or 4 times, maybe more, in some places definitely many times. More than 3 or 4 times. But every time you listen to it, you get more and more out of it. You understand it better. You're around the language. You're able to start to articulate it a little bit. You start to understand it a little better. Every time you go through it, it's like reading the Bible. Every time you go through it, you get to understand it more and more and more. But once you get it, the key, and this is probably the most important thing that you can understand in common law, you are the king. And nobody has anything to say about you. You do what you make the law, you do what you want. That's what common law is all about. As long as you don't hurt another individual or destroy someone's property, nobody can do nothing to you. You're the king, okay? And when people get that attitude and catches a hold of that state of mind, okay, now your whole world of freedom really opens up. And now you start to apply that. And I could tell you, we've moved through this quite quickly. It doesn't take years to understand this. If someone is really dedicated and focused, you could do this in 3 months. I know we did, okay? I mean, we put a lot of time in it, though. So a lot of people don't have that kind of time, but for sure you can get it done in a year. You can become very good at common law in a year's time with maybe putting an hour or two a day into it. And if you're driving, you throw the tapes on when you're driving and you get hours of stuff in it, during your drive time back and forth to work, or if that's what you do for work, you drive a lot, just keep those tapes playing. Get an MP3 player, stick it on your head. That's what I do. And so I play it either in my vehicle or I play it on my MP3 or I throw it on my computer. When I'm doing my exercise, I throw it on and I just listen to this stuff over and over and over again. And And then now the process of how things work in court, we did a course called Jurisdictionary, and it's a quote-unquote 24-hour course. But in reality, I'd say it's 3 months, you know. In other words, you got to put, for every 1 hour, you need to put, you know, 8 hours in, let's say, of real focus time, but and studying. But what I discovered is we're taking Jurisdictionary and everything we learned there, what we've learned in the courts already, what we've learned in common law, the procedures, the process, what information we've collected and all of the law we collected, case history, case law, laws, rules, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And we're going to put it together very simply in a very direct way, almost like charts. Go from here to here. If this happens, you can go this way or that way. I mean, just lay it all out and just lay out all the paperwork and everything. And we're going to offer that course right on NewYorkCommittyman.org. Now, the course that we bought was $249, which is a lot of money, okay? And you know, that course is no longer available. I had the link up on our website, New York Committeeman, but I took it down because now he doesn't have the course available anymore. What he does is you have to do the course online now, and you pay $249 a year to join a membership to get access to his stuff. And that's not the way it should be or got to be. So our course is going to cover a lot more better than that course did anyway. We're going to lay it out clearer, and we're going to combine the common law strategy and philosophy and ideas into the course system. And we're just going to lay it all out and explain everything we can. And it'll be a growing thing. You know, we'll probably add to it as we go. And we'll also do if we get enough people interested, we'll go around and we'll give lectures. You know, we'll do conferences. You know, we'll come to a particular place, you know, and if we get at least 20 people to come to that place, we'll do an all-day conference. And we'll go through the whole process and showing the layout and how to do these things. We're also looking into allodial titles. We're going to teach that. If anybody knows what that is, that's, you know, when you actually do own your property and therefore you don't pay taxes, you know, instead of renting it out, which is what you're doing now. If you own property, you're renting it. You don't pay your rent, they're going to take it away from you. And we teach in some of our cases, and we'll probably talk a little bit about this, on how they get away with doing that and how they operate and by what law, commercial law, they use, which is called REM, to take your property, which is admiralty law, and it's the law of the sea and what they do with pirates. They take the ship. They seize the ship when they catch the pirates. So now they're seizing your property under the same law, admiralty law, and it's called REM. And they make no bones about it. They actually call it REM, that their action is in REM. But we're so ignorant to this stuff. We should know this from school, okay? They've robbed us. They've robbed us of our education.
Hey, I just added to the chat window some of the codes to look up. You can Google this, and you'll get references to what we're talking about, that the IRS uses a court of record proceedings, which is 26 U.S.C. 7441. And it's a paragraph. Maybe John wants to read it, but essentially 26 U.S.C. 7806B, the IRS codes and regulations are not law.
There you go. And that was in the beginning of your notice and demand, wasn't it?
Yes, second reference, but not.
Yeah, I remember we put that into that. So.
Yes.
What I'm going to do, we'll continue on in our conversation, but I'm going to end the recording for now because I don't want them to get too long for people who may come up and try to catch up and listen to these past episodes. So let me shut the tape off, and then we'll continue on. Hang on a minute.